Welcome back to Hash Rate Up. Today is all about Satoshi Action Fund. I sat down with Dennis Porter, CEO and co-founder of the Satoshi Action Fund, to talk all about regulation and mining. I met him in Las Vegas and surprised to see him there. So yeah, Hash Rate Up starts now. Enjoy. All right, guys. So like I said in the brief introduction, as always, I'm here today with Mr. Porter, Dennis Porter. Hi, Dennis. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent, Jesse. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to the conversation we're going to have.
Me too. Dennis, you are CEO and co-founder of the Satoshi Action Fund. We're going to talk a bit about mining regulation, government politics today, the US politics. I know there's a couple of things if you're on the Bird app or the X app that frequently baffles me as a foreigner, and I'm sure that baffles you too as a US citizen even more. We are block height 851286. Our hash rate, 14-day hash rate, is at 571 exahashes, and we are hovering, yeah, still in the pain zone, $46 per petahash per day, roughly, giving miners a bad time. And also sort of filtering out the ones that should not be operating anymore, I guess. Dennis, to start this off with, somebody, and I saw this today on your Twitter, somebody calling you the Bitcoin mining's Batman. Why?
I've actually been called that a few times now. It's an emergent nickname that I have been gifted and have the honor to carry. But I've never actually asked why they call me it. But I'd have to assume it has to do with the fact that every time really bad FUD shows up, I'm there to fight the FUD. I'm there to change the narrative for Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining, just like how Batman is there to you know protect people against the criminals and fight the bad guys. Like, anytime something bad happens to Bitcoin mining, I tend to be the one in the room showing up and doing everything I can to make sure to restore the balance of peace in Gotham, so to speak.
Cool. I have to say I get tired of it sometimes. Like, I'm frequently at that stage where I'm like, okay, it's gonna survive, you know, it's gonna go where it's gonna go. It's not gonna go away because of some headline. What keeps you going? What keeps you fighting the good fight?
Well, I mean, it's not just about fighting the FUD and you know, changing the narrative. It's also about scoring wins for Bitcoin from a legislative and policy perspective. It's about being able to make the United States the best place in the world for Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. And that is a long-term process. And so although we do love to move quickly and score wins for Bitcoin, I'm not confused in the way that I approach my project. I know that this is going to take years, maybe even a decade, to truly position the United States as a leader on this technology. FUD is going to come, FUD is going to go. I think a lot of different issues also deal with this type of constant back and forth. You know, if you look at the energy world, the different types of energy, whether they be green energy or fossil fuels, like the people that are advocates for those types of energy assets, they deal with constant ups and downs of FUD or you know, misinformation about their technology. And so I just think this is going to be a permanent thing in the space to a certain degree, right? You'll always be dealing with people who want to try to confuse other people or to demean Bitcoin or Bitcoin mining as something that it's not. Because it puts them in a better position. So I'm happy to be continuing to, fight the FUD, to continue to keep the record straight, to ensure that people have access to resources and research and information and policy that will help, them be leaders on Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining.
I mean, arguably the US is already the best place to mine Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
It's true.
So are you kind of just trying to keep it that way?
I would say that it is, in the last year or two, truly become one of the best places in the world to be a Bitcoin miner. But that is not something that we can assume will carry on into the future. I think really just in the last year, maybe even the last 6 months, people have started to feel much more optimistic that the United States would maintain its leadership role in the Bitcoin mining sector. But previous to that, there was a ton of concern around you know, what would happen in America based on the actions of the Biden administration and various states like New York and Washington and others that were seemingly taking a hostile perspective on Bitcoin mining. So I do think that right now, currently, there are some states in the U.S. that are true leaders on this technology. As a country, though, it's hard to really frame it broadly that we are the best in the world. I think really it comes down to just Texas and Georgia and Oklahoma and now Ohio trying to be a leader. But we want to see the entire country benefit from the technology, because this technology has the ability to balance the grid, mitigate methane emissions, and to expand clean energy in a way that no other technology has before in the past. And I think that's, you know, something that we want to keep here and have happen here in America. But we need more education, and we need more advocacy for the technology, because today still so many people do not understand its potential.
Yeah. Similar to how you support or want to support the US to become the best place in mining or remain that place, I would really like to see more hash rate coming to Africa. Yeah. Because I've said this numerous times on the pod as well. I think it's just ripe, right? No infrastructure, low population density, no built out grids, no infrastructure. So it's all going to be decentralized anyway. And I think, like, when you look at a country like Ethiopia now using mining to make a lot of money off of power sales that previously couldn't be done, I think you will see other African nations also adopt the same thing. And you can already see that dynamic starting to take place. Do you think it's the same with American states? So, you know, Ohio looking at Texas, and then states who might previously be very, very blue, very anti-mining, very anti-Bitcoin in general. They might look at these states and say, hey, like, why does the integration of renewables work so well over there and not here? And then make Bitcoin mining to be the differentiator. Do you think that's a possibility or no?
Certainly I do. You know, but to go back to your point really quickly about Africa, you know, I'm very bullish on Africa as a country leading the world on, you know, on what I would call like energy development, like first of its kind energy development, and using Bitcoin mining as a tool to do that. Here in America, we have a lot of energy assets. And so Bitcoin mining tends to fall into the place of being a grid balancer more than it does to be a tool to build out energy generation, although that is completely possible. And in some cases is happening already. But in Africa, it's like actually happening. It's really, really happening. I get messages all the time. I think I got one just yesterday from Kaukasa from Ethiopia. And he was talking about how she was posting videos of it too and like sharing it with me. And it was just incredible to see the size of the operations that are taking place there, and to see for the first time ever that in parts of the world where there was no energy infrastructure, that these places now have access to critical electrical energy infrastructure. And that is incredibly huge. I mean, this is a very, very big deal that there are parts of the world where there was no energy and now it has energy because of Bitcoin mining. Those parts of the world where they would not be able to have access to electricity to be able to store their food in a refrigerator or to reheat their food in a microwave, like very basic things that we kind of take for granted in the West, now are possible in those parts of the world. So that really can't be understated. And I'm super pro like doing whatever we can to continue that type of development. Now, with regards to the second part of your comment, your question, I do believe that when some states act, others will follow. And I've seen that happen in real time. With our model policy at Satoshi Action Fund, we have things like the right to mine, the right to access Bitcoin, the right to self-custody, the right to operate a node. And when we started introducing our policy across the country, we always intended it to become a blueprint where we weren't even having to be involved in the process. It would just take off on its own. And in the second year of our organization at Satoshi Action, we saw that happen. We saw lawmakers introducing our policy, and we'd never talked to them before. We saw, you know, think tanks that are outside the crypto space, outside the Bitcoin space completely, have nothing to do with it at all, push for our policy and try to push it forward in their state. So absolutely, you can see some states act and other states follow. And I think that's also there's a danger in that as well, because states like New York, which created a moratorium or a ban on Bitcoin mining, we were really concerned that that would take off across the country. Now, we haven't seen it explode, but certainly there have been pockets of attempts to to create moratoriums on Bitcoin mining, whether that be through a straight up ban or through special discriminatory noise regulations, or whether they be through special electrical rates that were meant to target Bitcoin miners and exclude them. There is efforts underway across the country to do that. And so you have to be really careful. And that's why I think it was so important for us when we set out that we said, we need to create the blueprint for the good side, right? We need to be out there fighting the good fight and giving these policymakers tools in their tool basket to be able to score wins and help grow the Bitcoin mining network within the United States. And so as states like Texas, Georgia, and others that have large amounts of hash rate, and they doing, you know, onboarding it and using Bitcoin mining successfully as a resource on the grid, as that expands, I do think other states will look at that and say, okay, well, how can we do that? How can we copy that? How can we be a part of that? Now, when you talk about the red to blue divide, it's a little more difficult. No blue state lawmaker is looking at Texas and going, oh, wow, we really love what Texas is doing. Like, we should just copy that on from an energy perspective, because they're pretty hotly contested and divided on how they approach energy. But definitely from a red state to red state. But it is a goal of Satoshi Action to continue to press and move into blue states. Just like, I don't know if I haven't given this example to too many times, although I've given it plenty. But in the cannabis industry, what happened with cannabis in 2010 to 2012 was they changed their strategy. They really focused on the states, and they began to score wins, legislative wins, even in the face of, you know, federal ban. It was a felony to buy, possess, distribute cannabis. Despite all that, they were able to score some wins in blue states. And then a lot of blue states started to copy that from 2012 onward. But eventually what happened was it did start to pick up in the red states. It's just, I don't think you'll see that sort of like automatic, like, oh, well, the red states are doing it, so we should copy them. We need to get an initial good like blue state on board, which is something that I'm working on, especially on the West Coast here. You know, we've got Oregon, Washington, and California, three really great states that are squarely in the blue camp, that if one of them were to make a movement and try to create policies that helps to expand green energy, then that would be a huge win. In my own state of Oregon, I know there's similar policies in Washington and California, but in Oregon, we have a mandate that we have to be 50% renewable by 2040. I mean, that's an incredible amount of renewable energy. So how do you actually get to the point where you can, how do you actually get there, right? You know, it's a great idea in theory, but how do you monetize all that excess renewable energy that you're going to have and be able to balance the grid properly? And I think that Bitcoin mining is a clear and obvious solution for excess renewable energy. We just need the policies in place to be able to access it.
Yeah, I mean, Germany, my home country, likes to sell Bitcoin currently, and also shows you how to get to a very high share of renewables is by making everybody pay for it. And then having electricity prices north of $0.40. That's one way. I want to go back to the red and blue state thing just now. Just want to round off the Africa thing briefly, because you made me aware of something. There's another use case in between the ones that we just mentioned, right? Ethiopia is this case where all the infrastructure is present with substations and everything. And that's where you see these large 80, 100, 200 megawatt farms being built up by Chinese, Russian, European, American players. And then the gridless model, commonly known in the mining space, right, is this idea of having this sort of isolated in the middle of nowhere grid that's off from the national grid, that's purely private, and where folks will instead of running Bitcoin miners to balance the grid somehow, because they have to do it, use a different load to do that, right? Like heating up water in a basin somewhere, just to balance the grid out. When you were talking about the red and blue debate, right? Isn't it smarter, Dennis? And please correct me where I'm wrong. If you talk to utilities over lawmakers, would it make sense to not talk to those guys and say, like, listen here, you know, power works the same whether you're in a red or in a blue state. You guys have the task to integrate renewables. Look how these guys are doing it. You know, see, ERCOT in Texas is already doing advertisement for Bitcoin mining in government and when they speak publicly. Right? Wouldn't that be an angle too, to like speak to the utilities and get them to pressure the politicians to look at this again, because I mean they have this mandate of keeping the grid stable, and they are a super conservative old school business, right? That politicians inherently trust more, I would say, across the board than Bitcoin miners.
I think there is value potentially in approaching utilities, certainly in having those conversations, but it's no easier than it is talking to lawmakers. In fact, sometimes it can be more difficult. The one of the major problems with the Bitcoin mining like utility relationship is that for the last 10 years, you know, maybe starting about 3 or 4 years ago, I would say let's frame it this way. For the first 10 years of Bitcoin mining's existence, you know, Bitcoin miners were going out and are very small at first, but then they grew in size, and the amount of load that they were requesting was pretty significant. But these were still Wild Wild West days back then. So some people were coming in requesting power. They weren't fulfilling their orders, or they were like, they'd build these sites out, they'd go bust, they'd go bankrupt, and they wouldn't need the power anymore. And that creates a significant problem for utilities. So there's actually a lot of utilities. In fact, the first places that Bitcoin mining went to in the United States tend to be the worst place with regards to relationships with utilities, because so many people went there. I mean, look at everywhere that Bitcoin mining went first. Bad relationships. China, banned it. New York, banned it. Washington State, like on the verge of banning it. It's very difficult to even do business there anymore. Look up in Canada. Like in a lot of parts of Canada, there was like huge amounts of Hydra up there. Hydro-Quebec, I think more or less banned the ability for Bitcoin mining to operate like on their energy systems. Like they won't serve new load to them. So there's a lot of utilities that have the opinion that Bitcoin mining is just like a bad business. Like we don't want to touch it. We want nothing to do with it. But those people that are learning about it now, who have an open mind, who haven't been burned by, you know, the Wild Wild West days, which we've clearly left behind, those are great opportunities. Those are great opportunities to get in and have good conversations. I mean, I will say that one of the largest utilities in the entire country, probably the entire world, is currently researching Bitcoin. Like they have a microgrid, they research Bitcoin mining on it. They understand its potential. Now it's a big organization. It's a huge organization, right? So it's very political within these organizations too, is like corporate politics, I mean to say. And so there's a lot of difficulty in kind of taking that idea and like putting it to the front and making it a reality of something that they will actually, I think, truly integrate into their systems, but they are studying it, they are researching it, and they're open to it. So there's a lot of positive signs that utilities will come around, but a lot of utilities have had very bad experiences with Bitcoin miners, because back in the day when it just got started, today still anyone can do it, but the market has significantly matured since those early days. And so that doesn't happen quite as much anymore, but there's a lot of utilities that talk to each other and they say, you got to watch out for these guys. They're going to cause problems. They're going to ask for power that they're not going to use. They're going to build a site and then they're going to go bankrupt, and you're going to have all this electrical infrastructure that now is on the, you know, it's up to the utilities to sort of cover those costs. So we do talk to utilities. We also talk to energy regulators. We think there's a lot of opportunity there as well. But it's not necessarily the easy path forward. Now, generally you do want the utility on board. In fact, especially if you're going to change energy policy, It's much, much better to work with the utility and the public utility commissions or public service commissions versus like trying to cram legislation that changes energy policy down the throats of those two entities. Because utilities typically do not like being told what to do by the legislator. They much rather work through the public utility commission or public service commission or the local regulator. That's what we hear time and time again. In fact, we've been told by multiple utilities, the most hostile experiences that I have had in this space have been from utilities and their lobbyists. I've been threatened by utilities. I've been told by utilities that they'll go to war with me. I've been told by the lobbyists that like they basically just like spread like FUD with the lawmakers the whole time we're interacting with them. In one situation in Idaho, I went out there to do a lunch and learn for the lawmakers about Bitcoin mining, and all the local energy lobbyists showed up to the room, and they just like filled the room up. And then they started like debating me like in the middle of my like lunch and learn. And then when I was like, you know, turning around to talk to a lawmaker, they were like stealing my resources behind my back. The reason I know it happened is because it's all on camera. I don't think they realized that the room was being recorded through Zoom. So,
but isn't that what you want, Dennis? A room like that to debate people?
It was not like a room to debate people for the sake of having a good conversation. It, like, fortunately, I myself and like the three other true experts on the call were up for the challenge. And certainly, I think if they wanted to set up a debate where that's how it was, you know, characterized, that's fine. But that's not how that was characterized. This was a lunch and learn Satoshi Action opportunity working with the Idaho Freedom Foundation to educate lawmakers about Bitcoin mining. Now, I love a debate, so bring it, right? But that's just very hostile behavior. They took over the meeting and made it difficult for the lawmakers to even talk or have any conversation. At one point, I had this one gentleman like kept raising his hand over and over and over again. I said, excuse me, are you a lawmaker? And he's like, no. I was like, okay, we're going to reserve the questions for the lawmakers, because they just couldn't stop trying to like shut me down or prove that I didn't know what I was talking about. And in general, that type of hostile behavior, lawmakers don't like that either. They are like, well, I don't want to get in the middle of this. Like, this isn't what I signed up for. So it is.
That's such an extreme reaction, right? I mean, yes, sure. Like, right. There's bad operators. They can't afford the deposits. They go bust. They ask for 10 megawatts and can't use it like 3 months later. Fair enough. If you're on the spot market, you're buying power, then you're competing with toasters in America. That's fine. I understand that if you have to reserve power on a line somewhere, you have to put a deposit down. And, you know, but then you have to somehow separate the technology and what it's capable of from the bad operators and make people see the difference and what could happen if you have good operators, right? It just seems like such an extreme response that makes you think, hey, like, you know, is there more behind that aggression or emotions, all of those emotions, you know?
And we're actually very favorable towards, you know, creating systems where you have to have somewhat of a deposit. I think they get a lot out of control from what I've seen out in the wild, but it does make sense, especially with this type of industry, to have a little bit of a deposit, maybe have a little bit of a surety bond. In fact, when we were talking to Entergy down in Arkansas, they had a very good plan. So Entergy has multiple chapters in different states, different parts of the country. Entergy is like an E-N-T-E-R-N-G-Y, right? Entergy. Not to be confused with the word energy. But they watched what was happening in other parts of the country, and they said, you know, I think there's an opportunity here for us to like improve on how we interact with the miners. But it makes sense for like both sides of the coin. You know, we like to sell power. We're a power company, but we also don't want to put ourselves in a bad position or bad situation where we get out in front of our skis and then we get burnt by these Bitcoin miners. And so they had the system where it's like, you know, 3 months deposit and then a surety bond, but then like over a certain amount of time, like the deposit would drop and the surety bond would decrease. But it gave miners access to demand response type power rates where they were getting significantly reduced rates because of their participation in the grid. Like, they had to participate in the grid to get those rates, but then they also had to make sure that they were protecting the utilities and also protecting the ratepayers on the other side as well. So we love to see those types of systems increase and grow. And I think that's in a decade, like you won't need nearly that many types of special programs to protect people. But right now we do really need to make sure that we're not allowing, you know, bad actors that want to, or people that just have no idea what they're doing, coming in and taking up way too much power and burning the utilities and creating bad relationships for us. Like, we don't want to continue to see those types of things happen.
I mean, that's also, I mean, the American way of the free market, right? There's no other market where a free market is as important as the electricity markets for the sake of balancing demand and supply. And if utilities say, hey, you know, this is what we require from you as a Bitcoin mining company, then they're competing with others where Bitcoin miners could also go and competing with requirements. And maybe, you know, they would hire somebody that's an expert and that can accurately, you know, judge the risk of every particular Bitcoin mining company that comes their way, you know. I'm sure a CleanSpark or a Genesis Digital Assets will have less deposit requirements than, I don't know, some miner that has 3 megawatts running somewhere, right? So it's a matter of competition there as well at some point, I think. But the question is whether there is maybe federal regulation that requires a certain minimum level of deposits and stuff like that. But then we're getting really into the nitty gritty, I think. Dennis, do you want to talk to me a bit more about the right to mine? You mentioned that briefly earlier. What is the right to mine that you guys are working on?
Yeah, so when Satoshi Action launched, we really quickly realized that, you know, even beforehand, that like as we were building this organization, that Bitcoin miners were facing a pretty significant amount of discrimination, and that there was no one in the space truly defending Bitcoin mining. No one. And so we set out with the express intent of battling back against this undue form of discrimination. We believe that Bitcoin mining has so many benefits that it can offer the United States. And there was just really no one in the corner of Bitcoin mining from a policy perspective. So we set, you know, the trend, we blazed the trail, so to speak, on creating policy efforts and agendas for Bitcoin miners specifically. Our first effort involved creating not only educational resources, but policy that would help to prove that Bitcoin mining is valuable from an education perspective, but then also have policy that gets in there and really protects Bitcoin mining from those types of discriminations. The various forms of discrimination that we would see that happen would be like I mentioned two of them earlier, noise regulations, special noise regulations that create specially super low regulations for miners that basically they can't comply to. Zoning. Or the second one that I mentioned earlier was the discriminatory rates. So like setting some sort of crazy high rate just makes mining totally uneconomical. And then the third one was a zoning discrimination. Those were not just like, oh, theoretical forms of discrimination. These were real forms of discrimination that we saw taking place across the country. So we created a piece of policy called the Right to Mine, which banned those types of discriminations, but it also created extra protections and encouraged the usage of Bitcoin mining, and protected not only Bitcoin mining from a like business perspective or from an industrial perspective, but also like things like home mining, because we believe that ensuring the decentralization of the network from a hash rate perspective is critical. And so we wanted to protect the broad swath of different types of mining all the way down to just the individual home miner as well. After we crafted that public policy, we introduced it in 7 states, and then we ended up passing it into law in Arkansas and Montana. Montana was an interesting one because that was actually where the form of discrimination from a zoning perspective came from. The county of Missoula, they decided to put an emergency board meeting together, and they said that we need to find a way to get rid of this Bitcoin mining because it's destroying the environment. So they put an emergency meeting together, and then they made a bunch of zoning changes and put a $20 million Bitcoin mining operation out of business because of those changes that they made. So they were successful in discriminating against Bitcoin mining. But you know, a year later, we passed a bill to ban those types of discrimination, those forms of discrimination. Now, we can't go back in time and fix the site that they ended up destroying economically. But the person that was part of that site was a big part of the effort in Montana to pass that bill into law. And so to this day, he's thrilled and excited that even though his operation was destroyed because of these, this type of discrimination, but that it would never be able to happen again in that state. So that policy has now also been, those policies have now also been passed in Oklahoma and Louisiana, but that's an expanded bill because we have the Right to Mine, which is, protecting mining. And that's what we started at. That's our core as an organization. But then we also expanded into what we call Bitcoin rights just generally. So we protect the right to self-custody, the right to run a node, the right to transact, the right to use Bitcoin, buy Bitcoin, the right to have a Bitcoin business. Like all these things are protected now in our new form of policy, which we call Bitcoin Rights Bill. But it also has all of those mining components in it as well. And that was passed this year in Oklahoma and also in Louisiana.
So what goes into getting that done, Dennis? Like you talk all day to politicians and staff at Capitol Hill in the US. You travel to all these states and talk to local lawmakers. How do you even get connected to them? Like if somebody comes up to them, or you go up to them or your team and says, hey, we want to talk to you about Bitcoin, like don't they just say, why? Like, why do you want to talk to me about this? Why, what do I have to do with it? You know, it's like I'm just trying to figure out the steps, you know, and you're super immersed in it. And sometimes I find myself, it's very tough to sort of take a step back and start from zero. But like you say, okay, you guys have a build. It's like a template, right? That people can can modify and take and turn into law. But how does that even happen? Like, how do you get connected at first? And then how long does it take until something like this gets passed into regulation, which is huge, obviously?
So the first step is you got to find someone who would be interested in introducing the policy. So you know, you create the model, which is not like, it doesn't look like legal text. It just is like, you know, very basic. You try to keep it as basic as possible so that it can be implemented in any state in the country. But you take that model and you go to a lawmaker and you say, hey, we'd really like to talk to you about Bitcoin mining. We have this piece of legislation also that we've been working on, and we want to see your state become a leader on Bitcoin mining. And we believe that this is a policy solution to help accomplish that goal. Would you, you know, meet with us and let us, you know, talk to you about Bitcoin mining and get to a point where you'd be maybe interested in working on this policy? Because a lot of lawmakers, they want to take decisive action on certain policy issues. However, they may not be an expert. They don't really know what are the real reasons or problems that the mining sector faces. It's a new technology. It's a very niche technology, and it also overlays with energy, which is a very complex issue. And so it's very common for lawmakers, especially at the state level, where they don't have a huge body of staffers and support helping them come up with policy ideas. And so you sort of come in as a outside group and you say, hey, this is our idea, but you look it over, you let us know what you think, you know, you should talk to your legal team about it, talk to your policy people that you do have about it, and see if it's something that works for you. And that's kind of how the process starts. Sometimes it starts other ways, but generally we look for people that we think are interested in technology broadly, or maybe specifically Bitcoin. And that's easy to do because you can look up tweets. How do they talk about it, right? Are they saying positive things about Bitcoin mining? Okay, that's probably a good target. Are they, you know, introducing other legislation that has anything to do with Bitcoin, blockchain, crypto, and any of that? Like, okay, they're probably a good target too. So that's a really great way to start. That's how we have done it in the past. And then from there, of course, you go through the whole legislative process, which is like a whole another like 10-minute boring conversation. But ultimately, you're working it through the process and getting it passed in the House and the Senate and then signed by the governor.
Pushing them through the sales pipeline. How important are these events? I mean, we met at Vegas. What makes you go to these events? Because I'm sure you know all of the industry already, right?
Well, we need support from the industry. We interact with miners regularly. We need to have conversations with them about what we're doing and help them to see the value of it. You know, at Satoshi Action Fund, we are actually on the verge of relaunching our entire supporter engagement program. So we are going to start providing benefits to our supporters where we share with them, you know, our resources, where we help them to be in a good position to go testify and to be in front of committees. We're going to be launching like a new advisory board. We're going to be, you know, putting on very regular meetings where they're allowed to access our policy team. Because funny enough, I don't know how this happened, but other than just maybe I just get lucky, but all the people that join my team, I mean, like they are just absolute rock stars. You know, so much so that like my policy team is like in very high demand. Like Eric Peterson, who's our policy director, I mean, he's probably one of the top crypto, I say crypto because he does have a wide range of policy experience in the broader crypto space, but he's probably one of the best crypto policy people in the entire country. Like it's like people want to be near him and access him. And so the sort of changes that we're making as an organization will allow these different miners, different Bitcoin businesses to get more customized access to him or to Dr. Murray Rudd, who's our science director. He's got 25 years of experience in the academic space. You know, he is someone who has been published over 70 times. Like he's not only a academic, he's a editor for some of these like peer-reviewed journals. He worked in the Canadian government, worked in the UN. So people want access to that. You know, my two co-founders, they've spent a decade in DC. They worked in the prior Trump administration, might get pulled into the next one. I don't know. Like people want to like ask those types of people questions. I mean, I ask them questions all the time and guess ask them for their input. I'm fortunate enough that they're my co-founders. But needless to say, you know, we're going out because we want to help the Bitcoin mining space, those that are at WDMS, those that are at Mining Disrupt, to be able to have a better chance of success in their education process when they're working with those local utilities, with those local lawmakers. That we want to help them to be able to be in a good position by using our resources. So that's really what we're doing when we go to these events. We want to try to find miners who care about the success of Bitcoin mining in the US and that are willing to invest the time and money to make sure that the United States stays a dominant player in Bitcoin mining for years to come. And ultimately it helps their, you know, their bottom line as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's always the case with Bitcoin mining, right? If it doesn't help your bottom line, there's less of an incentive. And that's exactly how Bitcoin mining works. You know, people don't, again, the Africa topic. I think that precisely because of that dynamic, decentralized grids will feature Bitcoin mining because there's just a clear economic incentive to do so, right? Without Bitcoin mining, it might not even be financially feasible to even start. Besides the point, with the remainder of the time, Dennis, let's talk a bit more about sort of where this is going. I'm getting the feeling, the vibe that the barriers have come down somewhat, that you guys have sort of a clear trajectory on how to approach things. It might have gotten a bit more easy. I mean, we recently saw very famous tweets with Bitcoin mining industry professionals from the whole range, you know, posing with pictures with presidential candidates. I read a headline today. I have it open in front of me now. Dennis Porter to moderate panel with Bukele, Trump, Saylor, and RFK. I mean, what is happening here? I mean, this is an April 1st headline, so I'm not sure if somebody allowed himself a good joke, but I get the feeling that this is not an April Fool's situation here.
It is an April Fool's situation.
It is? Okay. There you go.
I didn't find it to be entirely too funny, but
the thing is, you know, some people it's plausible.
Some people in the space like to mock other people. You know, it's you know, try to joke about them. You know, I don't have a whole lot more to say on this subject other than that it was like a targeted form of trying to mock me from Bitcoin Magazine. So I thought that was a little uncouth from them, but that's their prerogative in the space to sort of punch down on people that are like so far below them that they spend an entire like part of their like time to mock people that are actually doing good work in the space.
Fair enough. I mean, they got me, and it's the 8th of July. But my point with this is not entirely unfeasible, right? I mean, Donald Trump featuring with Bitcoin mining representatives, Bukele being very vocal about mining as well. Like, would you agree with me that it's become easier? Are you involved in those discussions at all?
It's certainly become easier to have conversations with the people at the highest level. You know, we are talking to not only to lawmakers here locally in the US, but across the world, people have started to reach out. You know, that's the exciting thing about where we are at Satoshi Action. You know, I think that if I had a little bit more resources and a little more time, actually time is probably the biggest one. If I had a lot more time, I could launch an international version of Satoshi Action and start doing what we're doing at the state level, you know, but take it to the smaller countries, developing countries across the world. I mean, one of the biggest hurdles countries face right now at the smaller level, a developing level, is a lack of policy experience and a lack of policy skill-making ability, right? Like most of these countries that we talk to, they clearly see the potential, but they don't have the deep policy experience and ability to craft policy that will result in good outcomes. I think people really underestimate just how powerful good policy can be. If you create good policy, you can create a super highway of good behavior that incentivizes the good actors to do really good things and also has like a barrier on the edges, right? Like where it disincentivizes bad behavior. This is a really, really good thing. We want to see this happen with Bitcoin. As a quick example, like because people are always like in the Bitcoin space, commonly you have a lot of libertarians and anarchists who seemingly want to have no government at all. I couldn't be further from that sort of position. I think that policy is extremely important for a well-developed society. Just take the highways and the freeways for an example. If there was no speed limit, no speed limitations or restrictions on the freeway, you would have people driving 5 miles an hour next to people driving 120 miles an hour. So that's a very dangerous situation. And so we don't allow that. Everybody has to drive roughly the same speed limit. In fact, in California, if you're driving like if everyone's driving 70 and like the speed limit is 60, like you have to like drive with them. They'll actually give you a ticket because it's more important that you drive the same speed limit than it is that you follow the actual like mandated speed limit, because that is how you, if you don't go the same speed, you dramatically increase the risk of an accident. It makes it way more dangerous. And so by having a freeway where everyone roughly drives the same speed, everyone gets to where they want to go faster and nobody gets hurt. So that's the same thing that we're trying to do through regulatory policy with Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. We want to create a super highway of good behavior for Bitcoin mining, mitigate methane emissions, balance the grid, create rural jobs, you know, expand renewable energy, solve some of the problems that renewable energy creates on the grid. These are all things Bitcoin mining can do, and we should be like super highway encouraging that behavior as fast as we possibly can.
Yeah, no, just to stay on that, I mean, the anarchists and libertarians will probably tell you all the highways would be privatized and there would be a financial incentives to not have people go 5 miles an hour. And there would also be regulations that would just come from somebody who owns that piece of infrastructure, I guess. But I mean, I'm on the same trajectory as you. I think like there's just a natural, almost a natural dynamic in humans, I guess, where we organize ourselves. I mean, at the end of the day, if you want to really break it down, that's how we survive, right? By working together in teams. And I think the natural outcome is always a government of some sort, be it small or large. But the problem, where the problem starts, I think, is if you give money to that government and they can print it without any restraint, then you get a lot of misaligned incentives. But just to stay on the energy topic, I think the organization of energy infrastructure is one of those topics that has to be organized from a central point, right? And then you get utilities, you get transmission providers and all of that stuff. And they need Bitcoin mining to provide a better service, right? Which is, again, where I'm with the example you gave earlier with the 20 million mining farm that was put out of business, right? I'm sure there's voices that will say, okay, let them put it out of business. They'll be, at the end of the day, the ones that suffer the consequences from it being harder now to balance the grid, less revenues from taxes maybe, right? Less jobs in a local community, all of that stuff. So there's that as well, right?
I mean, I would say that we certainly live in a world where energy is very centralized. In America, it's probably the least centralized compared to most countries. Most countries, it's like wholly owned and operated by the government. In America, it's like quasi-government. I mean, sort of, it's still very much private, but the government is like highly involved in the control of utilities. I mean, they're all regulated monopolies, right? To some extent or another. So I think that Bitcoin mining creates opportunities where you don't need that level of centralized coordination in order for energy to be successful. You can create new types of energy programs, whether they be microgrids. Like, and I'm not talking about like, you know, tiny little like 10 living dwelling unit microgrid. I'm talking about like, you know, gigawatts of power that you could create in the middle of nowhere and plop Bitcoin mining there to soak it all up, and then eventually build like a small city around it. And that could be a totally new energy system with a new foundation for how we, you know, govern that system versus today where it's like hyper-centralized, like you said. So I do think Bitcoin mining creates an open pathway to reduce the level of centralization around energy, but it'll be interesting to see how that develops. I mean, I'm a big fan of Brandon Quittam. I don't know if you know Brandon Quittam's article, Bitcoin is a Pioneer Species. I everywhere I go, I tell everyone about it, that they should read this article, that they should understand what it's saying, and then they should remember that every time they are looking at Bitcoin mining, that's exactly what is happening. We are seeing Bitcoin mining go out, till the soil, so to speak, in energy places where there's energy poverty, and then other tools, other uses are coming in and utilizing that energy. The most obvious one that we see taking place right now, which I believe has had a level of success. I'm not saying everybody should do it, you know, because I talk to a lot of different Bitcoin miners. I think there's situations where it makes sense to just be focused on Bitcoin mining, But there are some Bitcoin miners where they did set themselves up well to be able to be an AI company as well. So I think Iron here is a good example, right? They kind of preemptively set up their data centers to be multi-purpose, to be used for other types of compute load, not just Bitcoin mining. And so when AI became a thing, all of a sudden they were able to plug the AI into where the Bitcoin mining was at. But they wouldn't have been able to do that if the Bitcoin mining wasn't there first. And so I think people really should read that article, and it helped them understand like why that's happening, and why that's such a huge value add for the Bitcoin mining sector, and a huge value add for any country that wants to adopt Bitcoin mining.
100%. I mean, Brandon Quittam's, this article, The Pioneer Species, is already a couple of years old, but it's definitely, I mean, in the context of Africa, it doesn't get more accurate, right? This is exactly what we speak about when we talk about anchor loads in the middle of nowhere.
That's right.
For grids that would otherwise have 20% utilization rate, you need that Pioneer species to go in first. And on the AI piece, when I spoke to Nazar, he kind of changed my mind on this from TerraWolf, where he said, hey, like, you know, rather than Bitcoin mining going against, it might be required for AI companies to have a certain amount of Bitcoin mining load, because all of these interconnects in the country with all that growth that's coming in, there's only so many of them that can support 99.99999% uptime, right? And so you significantly widen the scope for your AI sites if you incorporate Bitcoin mining and can therefore curtail and use the rest that you don't have to curtail for your AI load, right? So he's saying it can actually play together, and where you can't ramp up and down the AI load as fast, you use Bitcoin mining to do exactly that, to open up more sites to you from a technical perspective, which I thought was pretty clever.
Absolutely.
Again, Dennis, I wanted to stick on the future a bit more. Like, where do you see the election going, and what is the impact on Bitcoin mining? I don't know if that's probably a very loaded question, but let's go with it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the election coming up is going to be a big inflection point for Bitcoin, the Bitcoin mining space. You know, you have an administration that is currently in power that seems to be continually hostile to Bitcoin mining, although we have seen signs that they are maybe changing their tune ever since the Trump campaign, I should say, started to speak more positively about Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining, which is very recent. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where they weren't speaking positively about it, but very recently they have. That started to set shockwaves to the political space, where I think it resulted in a lot of Democrats, you know, realizing that they needed to stand up strongly for this issue, or they're going to lose, you know, a lot of the support that they and they're going to lose ground to Republicans on this issue. And so I think the best thing that the Trump campaign did was actually make Democrats be more aggressive in the way that they, you know, are willing to advocate for the space, realizing that they could, you know, lose this entire industry, community, and technology to the Republican Party. Today, I would say that there's not really any strong signals yet that the Biden administration is going to like flip on the issue, but there are events, meetings taking place that are trying to, I think, encourage that to happen. So we'll see. We'll see what the results are. Those types of meetings are going to be taking place, you know, very shortly here. So I'm a bit curious to see what the outcome is. But let's say the Biden administration continues to be hostile and the Trump administration is not, and that he actually follows through on the promise to be supportive. Like, that would be a net benefit for the Bitcoin space, because if right now it's like people are sort of had been fearful previous to his positive work comments about Bitcoin, that America would not, you know, at the highest levels would not really sort of support Bitcoin or let it be something that does well here in America. But those fears seem to be subsiding, but you never know what's going to happen. Honestly, these elections are extremely unpredictable. Even in France, like, go there, like, people basically said it was, you know, game over for the moderates and the leftists. And somehow they squeaked it out, right? Like, despite all odds. Same thing happens in America. Nobody thought Trump would win in 2016. I don't think most people didn't think Trump would lose in 2020. So I think a lot of people are assuming that Biden is going to lose because he looks like he's going to lose, right? Like, but things change. They can change. Different cards can be played. Different tactics can be utilized. I think Trump gaining steam also terrifies a lot of Democrats and progressives and liberals and may make them campaign even harder. So we'll see what's going to happen. It's highly unpredictable. But the chances are that if Trump wins, that the situation would improve for Bitcoin compared to the Biden administration, because right now there's nothing positive about it from the Biden administration side of things.
Yeah, we can only hope that the positive use cases in the US are enough then to swing some support the other way into our favor, I guess. Dennis, explain briefly how folks and listeners can support you guys and your work. Like, what can I do? What can folks do out there? How they support you the best?
There's a bunch of different ways that they can support us. Everything from just following on our newsletter. You can go to satoshiaction.io. We're going to be rebooting our newsletter, doing it once a week here soon. And then also, I'm on Twitter all the time, ranting and raving about all the work that we do. So, that's Dennis_Porter_. It's on Twitter that I'm there a lot. And then also, from a financial perspective, if people want to get involved, they want to help us be successful. We're always looking for great partners in the space to come join our band of supporters. We have so many great different groups that we work with, and we can also plug those people into that network and help them be successful in a number of different ways. So yeah, I'd highly encourage people to reach out. I read all my DMs on Twitter. And if you want, I can share my email with them once they reach out. And we can all work together to be able to make the United States, or I guess, according to you, outside perspective, I always feel like we're not the best at it yet. But so I guess from the outside worldview is that we are, continue to make the United States the best place in the world for Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, I say that, there's obviously not every miner is the same. But when retail clients come to me and say, I want to get started, whatever, currently I don't see a better risk reward out there, and the hash rate in the country is big already and growing. Good episode by Marshall Long on Peter's podcast around centralization and mining. So that might also, don't become too good at it, right? Because that might also be a problem. But there's already, the hash rate speaks for itself, right? The network goes where it's most favorable to go. And there's a lot of hash rate in America. It's by far the largest chunk out of any other nation. And so, yeah, those numbers speak for themselves. Dennis, last question. Does Bitcoin consume enough energy, electricity or not? What do you think?
No.
No. Short and sweet.
Way more.
Way more. More is better. Hash rate up. Dennis, pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time. We met in Vegas, shortly thereafter to record this. So thank you very much. This is exactly also why these events are important for folks like me who go out and create content. I learned a lot. Thank you so much for giving us an insight into the work that you do. You already shared your Twitter. Anything else you want to share with folks where they should go and how to find you guys?
And no, that's pretty much it, but I'll be in Nashville. So if this goes up before then, reach out to me and would love to connect with folks there on the ground. I go to all the major conferences too. So generally when you're on the ground in America, I tend to be, in Nashville. I was at Miami for Mining Disrupt, and I'll probably be at the Texas November one as well. So if you have an interest in talking to me about how we can develop cutting edge, innovative energy policy that unlocks the potential of Bitcoin mining and ensures that not only the grid is balanced, but also that the cost of energy is down for Bitcoin miners. These are projects that we're working on. So if those are things that are interesting to you as a Bitcoin miner, then please come find me and reach out to me at one of these conferences.
But just to be clear, there's no panel. There's no panel.
Yeah.
But I've heard that Trump might show up. I don't know. Maybe that was another rumor.
I heard that the Lord Jesus Christ was going to come down from out of the sky and also join us on the panel as well.
Yeah, fair enough. Maybe Santa Claus early.
There, yeah. Get the Easter Bunny while you're at it.
There you go. Get them all. Get the band together. Yeah. If you learned something new, guys, you know what to do. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Dennis, again for taking the time. I'll see you next Sunday. Bye-bye.